Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is Cystine Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, Cystine Duckworth.
Good evening, everyone. Early evening in Phoenix, Arizona. And actually, we've had some nice days. We haven't gotten to the real heat yet. And I'm happy to say that. So bear with me today. This has been crazy, and we have some new equipment that I am really messing up on. But today, we are happy to have guest author Scott Ryan. And Scott is the author of an upcoming book due out June the 1st, I believe, called Moonlighting, an Oral History. It's an oral history, and it's the first book about Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd. I hope all of those individuals that were just spamming the program Facebook page, that were just really excited about hearing about this book coming out, which was actually pretty cool. Even some of the social media we have that's like in our immediate neighborhood. We're giving us little heads up, and that was their favorite show. So Moonlighting and Oral History is just one of the upcoming books by Scott Ryan. He's also done Last Days of Letterman, Scott Luck Stories, 30-something at 30, and as a director, he's done A Voyage to Twin Peaks, Meet Abby, and as a podcaster, The Red Room Podcast and 30-something Podcast. He's the editor of the Blue Rose Magazine, The Woman of Lynch, and he resides in Columbus, Ohio, and is married and has 4 kids. So he brings passion and humor to all his projects, and we're really excited to have him on our program today. So I'd like to say welcome, Scott Ryan. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I always get like... So overwhelmed when all my credits are going by because I think, did I really do all that? But I guess I did. Yeah.
Yeah, you did. That was only part of it. And when we add this to the magazine, we'll add the full thing. But yeah, that's you, Scott. That's you.
Wow. I need a nap. I got to go. I got to lay down.
Well, you know what? This is really, I'm going to tell you, when I got a copy of the book and I was going through it, and I didn't get to go through it as much as I want to because my daughter snatched it from me. This is her favorite show. And she's like, oh my goodness, what is this? You know, and I said to her, I tell you all the time that I get these great authors on the show, you know, and so she saw that book. I'm like, and you can't have that book.
My point that, you know, the kids just take and take and take, but what do they give back? I'm unsure of this. I have not heard this part. I have four kids, and I have yet to know what they give back.
That's true, right? Right. So let's start with why moonlighting. I know you've done a lot of. In fact, when I was reading, and I'm a David Lynch fan too. So I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. I'm gonna have to look through that one as well. But why moonlighting this time?
Well, Moonlighting is the show that made me want to be a writer, and
It
always influenced me. The very first thing I ever wrote was an episode of Moonlighting that I made with my friend, which nobody's going to see. Like, it's not going up on YouTube because it's really bad, okay? I mean, I was 17 years old, so it's no good, but that show lived in me so much that I wanted to create something from it. So years later, I got to interview the creator of the show, Glenn Gordon Caron, on my podcast, the Red Room Podcast, which covers television. And we had a great talk, and I asked him at that time, I said, I'd love to do a book about moonlighting. Well, at that time, I had no credits to my name. And now you just heard all the credits I had. And Glenn really just, I don't think he said no, but he certainly didn't say yes. So after my Letterman book, I thought, you know, now I really have a credit. Like, I've got something to show. So I still had his email. I emailed him and asked him if I could send him my Letterman book. And, you know, brought it up again. And he actually, in that email, when I said, I want to send you this, he actually went out and just bought the Kindle versions of 30-something and Letterman and said, you know what, let's do this. And once I had Glenn's yes, I was just over the moon. You know, this is, you got to have the executive producer give you the go-ahead, because then everyone's willing to talk to you because they know that you've got the yes man from the top.
From the top, right. That had to be awesome. I know when I get a yes from someone of that caliber, it's like, oh my gosh. But that's great. So how long did it take you to complete the book?
I think it was 2 years. I think it's almost exactly 2 years. I think I sent him that email in May or June of 2019, and it's coming out June 1st of 2021. So it took almost exactly 2 years.
So after you had the manuscript and everything was edited and ready to go, did you send a copy to Glenn?
Actually, Glenn did not want to see it. So I did contact him and said, hey, I'm done. Do you want to check this over before I send it to the printer? And Glenn said, no, I don't want anyone to think that I had a hand in this beyond, I mean, he gave me a new interview and he did try to pave the way to Bruce. That's how I got to Bruce. And Bruce actually said yes, but we couldn't make the date. He kept canceling and it just didn't work out. So, but he didn't want to read it. But there's another executive producer on the show, Jay Daniel. Jay read it early and approved everything because I wanted someone to be sure I was accurate before it went out into the world. So Jay gave me the blessing. And so we're all good there.
How difficult was it, though? I hear you say, you know, you and Bruce couldn't get the time together. How difficult was it to reach out to everyone that had, you know, been a part of this show?
That's the hardest part of what I do. It's the part that I like the least because you know, we just live in a time where everybody is out to get somebody else. And that is not my style. So I feel like when I'm, you know, when I'm asking for them, they're very suspicious of me. And I understand
yeah.
why they are, which is why, like, I always want to give them a copy of my work so they see that, you know, I'm not here to do a hit job on anyone. It took
mm-hmm.
me well over a year to get to Sybil Shepherd, and it
wow.
wasn't Sybil's fault. It, you know, her people just would not let me pass that gate.
Right.
I don't think Sybil knew about it at all. In fact, what ended up happening was I interviewed one of the directors of the show, and when he was done talking to me, I didn't even ask him. He just picked up the phone and called Sybil Shepherd and said, look, this guy really is doing something here. I think you want to be a part of it. And that's the first time she ever heard about the book.
Oh, wow. Okay. But, you know, that has to be, you know, even when I started doing Vertical Magazine, I would have that same issue because we knew so many people in Atlanta and here on the West Coast, and we had so many, you know, people on our social media that became celebrities. So you always have that. I think it's just a media thing. You always kind of have that suspicion when you reach out to people because they don't know if you're there to, you know, create some kind of gossip about them or do some negative about them. So, yeah, I understand that. And you always have, you know, you got your gatekeepers. Sometimes they don't
right.
let, you know, even the best people through. But, I'm, you know, that's pretty good that you got through that. And so how was Sybil Shepherd
yeah,
to interview?
So, obviously, I was really nervous about speaking with Sybil Shepherd. I mean,
okay.
She meant the world to me. And I wanted, and it was so important that I talked to her. I know that a lot of people are disappointed that Bruce Willis isn't in the book, and I'm certainly not taking away anything that Bruce brought to the show. He was incredible.
Right.
David Addison is one of the greatest characters ever.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I really, knowing what the story of Moonlighting was behind the scenes, I needed to have that female voice in the book. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they didn't have, they only had like two female writers. They never had a female director. They didn't have a female producer. So, you know, if I left out the biggest female star of the show, it would have been bad. So that's why
right.
I really,
mm-hmm.
and I kept writing things to Sybil. I don't, none of them got to her. I found out later. But going to
right.
the people saying, you know, this matters. This matters for someone of your level and a female icon. You know, you need to have your voice heard. So I just was like, I built this up to be the biggest interview of my life. And then when I got it, they were like, here's Sybil's number. And I said, oh, so I'm going to call you and you're going to connect me. And they're like, no, Sybil just said, give you her home phone number. And I'm like, I'm going to call Sybil Shepherd's home? Like, what?
Right.
And I, you know, I called. She was just, hi, this is Sybil. How are you doing? I mean, couldn't have been more of a southerner and just, you know, all of that charm, and we probably talked for a half hour, maybe 45 minutes, and we were just getting in, and she said, you know, that's all the time she had, and I thought, oh, I'm done, and she's like, so let's talk tomorrow, or the next day, or whatever you want, I'm here for you, 100%, and she said, I want to rewatch
wow.
the show, and
mm-hmm.
so she started watching episodes, and we probably talked, I don't know, I mean, 10 times or something, and she was all in.
Yeah.
Couldn't be nicer. I mean, just a very, very sweet person.
Oh, that's great. That that had to be very exciting to be able to talk to her like that, you know, for this book. Because I know just the people that had responded on social media, I was like, whoa, this is a show that everyone liked and could relate to. And especially because when, you know, seeing Bruce Willis literally start his career on Moonlighting, it just was really exciting. I know it was for me to watch it. So I know it had to be for you to be able to write this.
It was. And the story of Bruce being casted is so fun. I actually got to talk to Reuben Cannon, who discovered Bruce Willis, and get his story, which was really important to get, because I think people today would sort of, for you know, not believe these stories, where basically the ABC executives were just saying, what woman would be attracted to this Bruce Willis character? We don't see it at all. You know, he's not a leading man. And they actually fired the casting director because they said, if you think this is the right guy for the part, you don't understand anything about casting men. And, and he said it's the only job he's ever been fired from. And isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is crazy. when you think about then, and you think about Bruce Willis now, that is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, so those are the stories that I could uncover for the first time. I mean, there is no other book about moonlighting. No one ever did one, which also is crazy.
That's true. Right. That's very true, because it's really one of those iconic TV shows. It really is. If I'm to go by my daughter who watches these shows all the time, okay, even if they're, you know, she'll look for them and watch them. That's her favorite thing to do. But it really is part of a list of iconic TV shows. So I'm really surprised that no one had ever written anything about it. But where do you get your inspiration behind writing these type of books?
Well, that's a good question, just because I don't know. I almost feel like it's not inspiration, but I think it's because I'm a hard worker. Like I like to work. This is what I like to do. I look for the opening. I mean, with my 30-something book, I love 30-something. It's one of my favorite shows. But I tweeted one of the writers, and that started an interview, which led to that. With the Letterman book, I made a connection with the executive producer. You know, here I had interviewed Glenn. So because I'm such a little guy in a big pond, I have to have a connection. Like, I can't, you know, if I want to write a Sex and the City book, I'm never getting to Sarah Jessica Parker. It's just not happening. So, you know what I mean? So it kind of balances, like I'm always open to when that connection happens, and then I pounce. So what I'm basically saying, if there's a celebrity at home who does not want me to do a book about them, just don't answer me on Twitter.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a great niche to be in, because of the fact that you're creating a history. I was kind of searching on the internet and doing the little things I do when I do research, and I found another list of things you don't know about moonlighting and all these lists. So, and I was saying, well, you know, how cool is it though to actually have written something where you actually interviewed the players, the stars, the writers in the program, and you really gave a lot of, because, you know, and I don't want to give the book away. I really don't. My daughter was reading it, and we were talking about it, and so there were so many great little tidbits in there about why, and now we understand why that happened, and, you know, whatnot. So, I mean, it's a great book to have if you really are into TV shows and the what and the whatnots of the shows. So I will say
I mean, that's really what I try to bring in all of my books, is there's always a question that I want answered. And for me, for Moonlighting, in 1987, this was the most popular show that there was. I mean, there's an episode that aired where 50% of every television that was turned on in America was watching Moonlighting. That's insane. I mean, that just like is something that will never happen again. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. in 2 years, the show was canceled. And I thought,
right.
how did this happen? That's, you know, to be that high and then be gone. That was really the question that I try to solve in this book, because it really does go on a rocket ride of, you know, it goes up and then it plummets down. And
right.
I think the reasons why will probably surprise readers. And I do think this book has a narrative that is kind of surprising. Like, you don't expect it, and then it starts getting really crazy.
I'm asking a question from one of our readers had given me a question to ask you, and it said, you know, did you go back and watch the series after you wrote the book to see how things fit?
So I did not. I actually didn't even watch the series while I wrote the book. How crazy
mm-hmm.
is that? I've seen Moonlighting so many times that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like most of the episodes, I can speak it. And when I was like interviewing these writers, I would quote them to them, and they would be, you know, they wouldn't remember. And I'm like, what? I say that line all the time. Are you kidding me? And when I'm done with a book, I really, like, I haven't watched 30-something since I finished that book 5 years ago. I need a break from
okay.
it. So it kind of goes
right.
in a vault for a while,
mm-hmm.
just because you're just, your whole life is that book while you're on there.
Right.
My wife is always excited when I start the next project because she, you know, doesn't have to hear about Sybil Shepherd anymore.
Okay. And so in your opinion, is it harder to do this type of book? Is it harder or is it easier when you're thinking of just to outright write a book without doing interviews, just based on just your ideals and your opinions? Do you think it's harder or do you think it was easier?
Well, I think an oral history is incredibly hard, and I've done 3 in a row, and I promise you I'm not doing another one unless somebody like comes and hires me outright to do it. They
right.
are a bear, because especially the way I try to do it, where I try to make it seem like everyone was in the room together and just one thought is bouncing to another thought. So I have to keep
mm-hmm.
everyone's interview in my mind while I'm putting this together. So when somebody mentions casting Bruce Willis, and I say, wait a minute, didn't Jay Daniel tell a story about that? And then you got to pull that over there. And then you're like, oh, what do I need here? It's like building the biggest puzzle.
My
next book, trust me, is not going to be an oral history. I mean, the idea of just sitting down and getting to write what I want sounds pretty darn good to me, instead of trying to make it fit from what everyone told me.
Right, right. But there were some parts in there where, like, one of the things that my daughter said, she said there were some parts that made her understand a lot about, you know, the different shows and why there were maybe some shows that were in there that were repeats, I think, and why they, you know, why
right.
did they show up. But then we were talking about that, and I was, and like you were saying, I was like, they ABC spent some incredible amount of money to produce this program every week.
Yes,
and
it was the most expensive show on television.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did Glenn, I mean, this is a keep-up thing for Glenn. How did he feel about, you know, having to chug these things out, and they're, you know, ABC's putting all this money in and they're really hyping this program up? How did, you know, was it stressful for him and for the actors?
Oh, yes. It was stressful for everyone. All, I mean, down to the person that answered the phone in the office. It was, they were under stress. And
mm-hmm.
honestly, when I did these interviews, most of these people had never given an interview about moonlighting before. And wow. It was like they were waiting for me to call, like they were sitting on this and that it was still weighing on them. You know, it does.
Wow.
They love it. Everyone loves the mm-hmm. show. Everyone, you know, one of the writers said it was like being in a foxhole in the war. Of course, it's stressful and horrible, but afterwards, these are your best friends because you went through this experience. But
mm-hmm.
Glenn felt an amazing amount of pressure, and a lot of it he put on himself. I mean, he wanted to do something different every single week. And as you, that's easy to do in the beginning of a run, but it's, you know, that gets harder and harder to do when you've done all
right.
these other things. So I do think the show beat him up quite a bit. Some of it
mm-hmm.
was honestly his fault and some of it was youth, but all of it was done with love and creativity.
Mm-hmm. So when they would have those breakouts, I'll say breakout sessions, but when they would be filming and then they would do those impromptu sessions during the show, were those planned or is just off script?
No, they were all planned. And one of the writers tells a story about how, you know, they were always filming the episode before it was written. So whenever
uh-huh.
you write, you know, Tuesday morning, you're filming Tuesday afternoon. So they're working on
wow.
this mystery, and, you know, they're basically writing it in order, and then they're filming it that afternoon. But they got to a point, and when they start writing it, they don't know who did it. I mean, they're just writing a scene. Well, they got to a
mm-hmm.
point where they looked at the clock, and they're like, you know, we've filmed 45 minutes. And we don't have time to solve this. So they just had Bruce Willis say who did it. And Cybill Shepherd turns to him and says, when did you figure that out? And he said, during the commercial. Because they didn't have time. So a lot of those very famous quips where they broke the fourth had to do with they didn't have time to write anything else. And
wow.
when they did stuff like that, the audiences loved it. And,
uh-huh.
you know, it was so new that then they, you know, started to do it more and more and more.
Okay. Well, I do have a question. Well, I have a question. I'm going to let this person ask you the question.
Hi, how are you doing? The Olsen Wells episode, the dream sequence. Now, it kind of made it seem like the studio or the network really didn't know how they were going to open that sequence. Did the network even know that did anyone know that they picked up Olsen Wells to do the opening sequence to the dream sequence?
So, great question. Where are you calling from?
I'm here
are
in Arizona.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm here.
oh, good. So for that, no. And what was crazy about that is that the director of the episode didn't even know they were getting Orson Welles. So Glenn ended up directing that scene because he came in that morning and they filmed it. And then Orson Welles passed away, and the episode was going to air within like 7 or 8 days. It's really close. And ABC didn't promo it. Like, people at home didn't know. They totally kept it a secret. And so when you turn on your TV, there's Orson Welles, and by the time it aired, he was dead. And it was the
right.
last thing he ever filmed was Moonlighting. And they kept it 100% secret. Nobody knew. Critics didn't know it was going to happen. And I even asked Jay, like, how did you not advertise that? And
right.
he said they wanted it to be a surprise.
Wow. And if I'm not mistaken, that was one of their highest episodes, correct?
Well, I don't know if I'm sure it was at the time. the highest episode was the episode where Dave and Maddie did it. That was the one. That was their high. But it was the episode that got the most Emmy nominations. I mean, in fact, Emmy Magazine is doing a spread on that episode next month because it was such a big Emmy magnet.
That's so. Well, thank you so much, Michael.
Well, thank you, and go hug a cactus in Arizona. That's all I know about Arizona.
Have you ever been to Arizona, Scott?
I have not ever been to Arizona, but my favorite episode of 30-something is called Arizona. That's as close as I can get.
Okay. All right. In fact, when you say go hug a cactus, I laugh because there's a house around the corner where it's nothing but different kind of cactus in the front yard. And we always joke when we go by there, we always joke and say, yeah, that's the house to live in if you're coming home drunk.
Well, maybe one time the husband came home drunk and the wife said, I've got a way to solve this.
Right. Right. That's true, too. So what was probably your, besides Sybil Shepherd, do you think, a lot of people were like, just the chemistry between her and Bruce was also a part of the show. Was the chemistry real for them as far as acting together, or was it something that just happened to be pretty good on camera?
Sybil was very clear that the chemistry was 100% real. She said the very first time they met, she said her temperature went up about 10 degrees as soon as Bruce walked in the room. They were very passionate about each other, and that is what caused a lot of fights between them because it was so volatile and there was so much stress in trying to finish these episodes. So I think the chemistry was real. Sybil told me very clearly, you cannot act chemistry. It's either there or it is not. And
so
it was there with
there.
Them.
Oh, okay. And so who were your other favorite actors in Moonlighting that you think maybe did not get as much attention as they should have?
Well, I mean, Elise Beasley played Miss DePesto, and Curtis Armstrong played Herbert Viola. And they are so great in the book and in the series. And I will tell you that 10 minutes before I was going to jump on with you, I got a text from Miss DePesto herself. She finished reading the book. She just got it. And she loved it and said it was great, great. And that is pretty darn cool as far as I'm concerned. The fact that Miss DePesto gives a seal of approval to the book, I'll take. But her and Curtis, everyone loved them. You know, they picked up the slack whenever Bruce and Sybil were unable to. And they were incredible in the show.
Wow, that's really great. Well, you know, I'm really glad to hear that you really had a lot of great, positive feedback from those who were part of the show that did read the book. I think that's pretty good right there. But let me ask you, let me ask you about a couple of the other things that you're doing. So you were a director of A Voyage to Twin Peaks, Meet Abby. Tell me a little bit about that.
So you said you were a David Lynch fan. Have you watched Twin Peaks, or was it David Lynch's films that you like?
I'll tell you, I've watched a lot of David Lynch films. I kind of like how he, does things. I never could get into Twin Peaks, and I think it wasn't because, I didn't like it. It just was, you know how it is that some things, you got to kind of really sit and watch it. And at that time, I just couldn't sit still.
Right.
Yeah,
totally. I understand.
Yeah.
So a voyage to Twin Peaks is that I went, there used to be a Twin Peaks festival in the town where Twin Peaks was filmed. And
okay.
I was a big fan of Twin Peaks when it was on, but I never mm-hmm. went because, you know, you go to a festival, you're like, oh, there's going to be a bunch of weirdos, and am I going to get there, and no one's going to talk to me, and what is mm-hmm. this going to be? But it was the 25th anniversary of Twin Peaks, and I was like, if I'm ever going to go, I feel like this is the time to go. But if I'm going to go, I'm going to film it. So I brought mm-hmm. my cameras, and I basically filmed the weekend and edited this half-hour documentary together, and it's up on Amazon for like 99 cents to watch. It's a very short piece, but it really changed my life, which is crazy, but going, you know, these were sort of my people, and it made me not so afraid to create art and step out into the world for real, and that's when I started writing, and it really changed everything for me. I wasn't so ashamed to be an artist or an author because I met other people who were creating things. So,
okay.
I don't know.
All right.
It was a great little moment for me and sort of changed my life, and I happened to capture it on film.
Oh, well, that's great. That's great. And it's so, and as an editor of the Blue Rose magazine, tell me a little bit about what the Blue Rose magazine is about. Or what
so
they, what
that covers Twin Peaks. Yeah, it covers
okay.
Twin Peaks. So it's a Twin Peaks magazine, and we, because Twin Peaks came back in 2017. And again,
right.
this was something else that happened when I was out there. Twin Peaks was returning, and I saw these fans, and I thought, this is going to be a good idea. And so a lot of people write for it. It ships all over the world. Like, to every country. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. insane how much people love David Lynch and Twin Peaks. And we come out, well, actually, we took this year off because I was really busy, and I was like, I need mm-hmm. to catch up. But we normally do it three times a year, and it's a full-color magazine where we interview the actors from the show or people behind the scenes, and people write their theories. So I do that with Courtney Stallings and John Thorne. They're my co-managing editors. And it's just something we do because we love the show.
Okay. Because I know it was a very popular show as well. It had really a lot of fans. One of my favorite movies of David Lynch that I always kind of have my own little movie fest was Dune, because I do like sci-fi. Dune was probably one of the first movies that was David Lynch that I saw, and I really liked it. But then I saw Wild at Heart. I really like Wild at Heart and Inland Empire. So I'm working my way through a lot of his films. But what can I say?
I love Wild at Heart. I love Wild at Heart so much. It's such a fun film.
Right, and it was kind of funny because when I was watching it, a lot of people were saying, yeah, I just really can't get it. And I'm like, yeah, it's actually really cool. So just kind of that whole quirkiness of it, you know, I really like his stuff. So
yeah, I mean, it's just weird. It's different.
It is weird and different. It makes you, I don't know how to say it. It kind of makes you think about the storyline. It also, I mean, Wild at Heart was crazy. It was really crazy, but I got it. It's like, you know how you watch a movie and it's like, oh man, I really get it. And it was so funny because I remember, I used to tell my mom, you got to watch this movie, you know, and she would say, I don't get it. And I'm like, Mom, what do you not get?
So, yeah, but to me, it's the greatest love story.
Yeah,
that has been put on film. It, because,
right.
And you, we're geeking out here, and I love it, but there's a scene where Laura Dern is driving, and she only hears news on the radio of mm-hmm. all these murders. And she gets so upset, right. she pulls the car over, and she says, get me some music on that. And he puts this heavy punk rock and roll, and they start kicking and dancing, and you're like, that is truly what it's like to be in a relationship. Like, none of us are getting flowers at the door and all this stuff like that they put in every Meg Ryan movie ever. Like, that,
right.
he captures how people are and stays true mm-hmm. to the character. So I'm going to watch
That's
Wild at Heart tomorrow. You've inspired me. I haven't seen it in a while.
That's good. So, you know, a lot of, you know, so one of the things that I'm really, you know, getting from you, and so tell me if it's true. So you love TV, you love movies, but you even more, you like getting into some of them and really, I think it's more than just doing a review. I would say it's kind of like when me and my cousin are watching movies and we'll say, oh, you know, so what would have happened if this happened? You know, and why were
right.
you know we get too deep into it sometimes. But how do you feel? I mean, is this passion of yours with these shows and movies and even having a magazine? And how do you feel about that? Is it really a passion for you?
Well, I'm probably annoying to watch a movie with, and I feel that way. I think about that when I'm with people who are not the same as me, but I want it to be a world. I want to be taken away from this world, and I want to see something I hadn't seen before. And when it moves me, then I want to know how they did it. Because I'm a writer and a creator, when I see really good art, I want to understand how that person did it. And so I feel the same way. But when I see, like, the worst TV and just the most average movies, I can't tolerate them at all. Like, I don't even want to be a part of it. Like, get that out of here. I want something that's going to really grab my heart, or I don't want it at all.
Yeah, I'm like that. You know what? In fact, when people give me a review of movies and they'll say, oh, you know, I didn't like this, it's like, it goes in one ear and comes out the other, because I'm like, yeah, you know, I'll wait till I see it, you know. Cause a lot of times I'll love it. And the same thing like you, I love to be in a movie where it really takes me somewhere and makes me think about, oh, wow, how do they do that? That's actually very cool. But I have noticed that, you know, a lot of movies I've seen lately have been, oh, I don't know, it's kind of like you put them in a thing and chug them out. There's really not a real good story. And so then I'll say, especially I'm watching it mostly sometime because of the actor or actress. And then I'm like, how'd they get you in there? What was the
money? Money was the answer.
Right. That's true. So what is the next project that you're working on?
So I have a book out about self-publishing to help other people who want to sort of understand what I've done. I wrote it with my friend Aaron O'Neill, and it's called But Couldn't I Do That? And we walk you through from idea to hitting published on Amazon how to do a book. We're also going to do a workshop that people can take where we'll answer questions and help you get your book to manuscript form, how to get it to a publisher or do it yourself. Because, you know, I've learned so much. I knew nothing about the publishing world just 4 or 5 years ago, and now I have all these books out, and I want to give back to someone who is like me, that was sort of afraid to take that step. And my friend Erin O'Neill did the same thing, so, and she's much younger than me, so she understands a lot of technology. So she's sort of the sweet one, and I'm like the old bitter guy. And so you get both stories weaving through, and so that's the next project up.
Well, that sounds really interesting, and actually, I like the idea because I, you know, as a radio person and in our magazine, I get a lot of Let's say there's a lot of authors that I've, you know, been introduced to, and some have absolutely amazing stories of how they got their books out. I think it's just it's really wonderful now, I feel, when a person can write a book and do their own self-publishing if that's how they choose to publish their book. And there's so many distribution points now. But I do think that a lot of people that want to write do need to be educated on the proper way to do this.
Yeah, and one of the things we talk about in the book is that just because you can publish anything doesn't mean that you should publish anything. You still better have something to say, and you still better be professional. You know, that's the thing that matters the most to me at what I've been able to do, because I carry myself as if I'm Barbara Walters. I want to be, I don't know who the new Barbara Walters is. Probably young people don't even know who Barbara Walters is. But you know what I'm
right.
saying? Like, if I'm
yeah,
going to interview someone, I want to be the best.
Right.
I want to be Oprah. There we go. Oprah's, everyone
right.
knows Oprah. You don't have
mm-hmm.
to use Barbara Walters anymore. and so you've got to carry that over to your publishing as well and make sure that you're proofing and getting an editor. So we walk you through how to do all of those things.
Okay. Well, that sounds really good. So I always ask writers when they're on the program, what is some of the best advice that you would give an up-and-coming that is listening to this program? Because we do have a lot of up-and-coming that are listening to the program. And because, you know, you have some experience here, what would be one of the main things or one of the most important things that you would, you know, give out as advice?
I think that having a peer group is really important. I think that so much about writing, you think about doing it on your own, that it's a solitary act. But as I said, going to that Twin Peaks Festival and meeting the people that I met,
mm-hmm.
that sparked something in me. When I met my friend Erin O'Neill, she was a writer, I was a writer, you know, that helps because you see what she's doing and she sees what I'm doing and then you believe it can be done. So
mm-hmm.
I think it is really, really important to have a peer group, whether you
right.
join something or you start something or it's on Twitter or Facebook. I mean, no matter where it is, find somebody to share this with. Read your stuff, read their stuff, support each other. And then it becomes, it isn't this thing that you can't touch. I think it's why so many
mm-hmm.
actors' kids become actors, because if you see
mm-hmm.
someone else do it, then you believe you can do it.
Right, right. And that's very important. So what do you do, Scott, for when you just want to get away from the writing and you just want to air out your head and just, you know, chill? What do you do?
I have a vinyl record collection that matters to me quite a bit. And
right.
I love to just sit in my chair and crank up some music. And I listen to it quite loud. It's glorious. And for me, music is what keeps me going. It re-energizes me. It gets the creative juices going. And if your day sucks, then pick that song that you're going to shake that right off. And so that's certainly something that I do that helps me.
Oh, that's great. I have my own playlist of show tunes. That's what gets me.
Well, I love Stephen Sondheim.
Oh,
Sondheim's
that
my favorite.
That's my little thing. I've got my little YouTube playlist, and if I had a bad call early in the morning, I'll just crank out a few of those until I get straight again. So now you have four kids, and how do you work with four kids running around? I'm not sure how old are they?
Well, luckily, they're all over 18. So
okay.
The last one graduates this weekend, and so I keep telling them, well, once that's done, I'm no longer a parent, so I don't have to worry about this anymore. I'm retiring from parenting. They have to go find their own way now. But because I had twins and I was a stay-at-home dad for 10 years. So
wow.
I learned to be able to work and create with them or being around. But it was interesting. I certainly get a lot more work done now. But that's probably why I can do all this stuff, because I was used to juggling two babies at once.
Right. Well, congrats on the last one graduating. But I was going to burst your bubble and tell you, now you become a growth counselor.
Oh, great. Okay. Wonderful.
Yeah, that's what I say I am. I'm saying, now I'm your growth counselor. But the benefit
luckily I give the worst advice. So if I keep giving the worst advice, won't they get a new counselor? I mean, come on.
Where can people find you, Scott, as far as social media, or, you know, if they want to come and visit you and your website? Give us a couple of addresses for our audience.
Of course. I run a publication, I don't know why I can't say that, company, a publishing company, called Fayetteville Mafia Press with David Bushman. So that's FayettevilleMafiaPress.com. My website is ScottRyanProductions.com. At Scott Ryan Productions, you can get the Moon Landing book, the publishing book, my 30-something Letterman, and on Twitter, I'm at Dory. And you can pretty much find me there and the Blue Rose magazine as well.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you for the interview. I really, you know, the parts that my daughter's letting me read of the book, I have to keep going in there and snatching it from her. But I'm really enjoying the book. It's a wonderful book. And I'll be looking at some more of your things as well. I want to hear your podcast. This is really good. And, you know, I hope that you'll come and visit us again when you have finished your other book. Yeah, I would really, really like that. So especially when you finish this new one for self-publishing, I would really love to have you on and talk about that program as well. And so we will be putting more of Scott Ryan out on, as I said, Vertical Life Magazine, and we'll be sharing more of him on our social media. This is a really wonderful book. It comes out, when does it come out, Scott? Is it June the 1st?
June 1st, a week from today, I think.
Okay.
Is that a week?
And they'll be
6 days from today.
Okay. And they'll be able to pick it up at Amazon?
Amazon or Fayetteville Mafia Press, or even better, your local bookstore. We love when you're supporting your local bookstores instead of the big corporation.
Nah. Okay. So now that the pandemic is over, will you be doing any in-person events with Moonlighting?
I am trying. We are trying to set a couple things up in L.A. with maybe some of the Moonlighting writers and things like that, and maybe even Sybil Shepherd has said she would be interested. But again, with the pandemic, things are getting rough. So until then, I'll just come to everyone's house. Anyone who wants me to come by their house,
that works.
I'll just make me a dinner. I'll show up, read a little bit of my book. You know, and maybe we'll watch an episode.
Well, keep me in the loop, because especially if you're anywhere close to Arizona, I would love to come and see you. And you know, if you're doing a book opening or anything like that, we would love to come and visit you.
I hope we'll watch Wild and Hurt together.
For sure, we will, most definitely. Or if I'm ever in Columbus, that's actually. Ohio is actually my family's home state. So you never
know.
There
you go. That's
yeah. Yeah, you never
know. We're bound to meet up.
Yes, most definitely. So do you have any last thoughts for our audience?
Well, in all of my books, I end them with a plea for kindness. Every book I've ever done is because one of those people on the TV shows were kind to me and took a chance. And so I always tell people, be kind and put kindness out into the world without expecting anything back. You're not kind to get something back. Just send it out, and that is the reward for you as itself. That's how I live my life. I try to entertain wherever I go, and it's good for your soul. So I want everyone to be kind.
Thank you for that, Scott. I really believe in that as well. And you really did a good job on this book. And I'm so glad that people opened up to allow you to do this. So congratulations, and I wish you just a lot in all your endeavors, but especially with this book here.
Oh, thank you so much. This was a great time, and I hope you'll have me back.
Oh, most definitely. We'll have you back. We'll have you back. So our time is running out. I have enjoyed talking to you. I definitely will have you back. And if we have any more questions that may come up on our social media, we will shoot them to you because we will on our Taste of Ink Live. So, yeah, our Taste of Ink Live social media page and Facebook. We do get a lot of people that are still coming on there and still asking questions. So we'll make sure we'll answer your questions. We'll post them on the social media page. And again, thank you so much, Scott, for being a part of the program. And I have a surprise if anybody stays on here and listens for the end of the program. But thank you again, Scott. We really appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, Cecine Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on booksthatmakeyou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.
Someone by night.